Welcome one and all as we close out another week here at the Damage Report. I am John Adirola, and as always on Fridays, Brett Ehrlich joins me, host of Happy Half Hour. How's it going, buddy?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here in the neighborhood because it's just Friday. I was reminded that it was Friday when I woke up, and my wife, who like a child, just was like, wake up. And it's that kind of exuberance.
She's just like pushing you into the bed to get up. Like a friendly puppy.
She tried to drag me out of bed because it was time.
That's aggressive.
And I did. I went limp. That's what you're supposed to do. Just go limp.
Exactly. Just body weight. What time was it at this point?
Like 8:45 of the clock.
You were still in bed at 8:45. I hate you.
I mean, I was awake at 2 until like 6:45. So
that's a whole separate weird thing about you. Anyway, I'm glad that you eventually got out of bed. Eventually, your brain will catch up. So glad to have you here because we've got some stuff to jump into. Occasionally, the news coalesces in a way that crystallizes how a broader thing works. And it's a perfect demonstration of it. And we're going to be starting off our show with that. It takes a lot for me to be willing to think about, let alone talk about, Steven Crowder. I generally don't find him to be particularly interesting. But he is so dumb that he has actually done something beneficial. And so we're going to be talking about that in a little bit. We've got some other people to contend with. Kyrsten Sinema, little challenge coming her way. That's going to be fun. Joe Manchin is finding a way to make everything worse than it needs to be. And have you considered the possibility that you get too many days off? Think about it. We're going to be discussing it later on. And in the aftermath, we'll be throwing away our Garbage People of the Week and taking stock of the latest reforms to Florida's Department of Education. What do you think they're going to be like? Okay, well, we're going to eventually get to that. Long before that, though, please hit the like button, share the stream so that people know we're live. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, and possibly if you're a member, have a chance at a Blue Apron gift card, you can send us your insightful and funny comments, and we'll read those as we go. And as of right now, live, we just passed a level one hype train. So keep it going. Anyway, with all that said, Brett, are you ready to start this thing?
I sort of. I'm a little conflicted in the meantime because I love that chicken from Popeyes. I'm just not in love with that chicken from Popeyes.
I don't understand. I don't get what this is.
It's just a random reference. What I was thinking. I don't know how to tell Popeye that it's like, I love you. I love you, that chicken from Popeyes. I'm just not in love with that chicken from Popeyes. Like it's a.
I felt some momentum and now I can't even see it anymore.
All right, in I guess 5, we'll talk about 4, 3.
Go!
Big tech is in bed with big con. The people you thought, the people I thought were fighting for you, a lot of it has been a big con. Now, I'm specifically avoiding naming names or going after individuals in this video, because I genuinely hope that those I'm addressing, and you know who you are, have a change of heart. Don't sign these contracts. I now know what you are signing out there. I have the luxury of not having to. You know, let me go through this. If any of the major platforms issues a content strike such that Crowder cannot be monetized on such platform, the fee will be reduced by 25%. And then another 20% of it happens on Apple. And then another 10% of it happens on Facebook. And then another 10% of it happens on Spotify.
Okay, so we're gonna dive into this whole Steven Crowder contract Daily Wire thing. Steven Crowder has gone very far in his career, unencumbered by what would seem to be a handicap in the area of politics and news analysis, which would be being a complete moron. But finally, it's caught up to him because he knows enough about the grift that he's engaging in to know that he is supposed to constantly make himself out to be a victim, because the right loves that. And he's supposed to pretend that he's this independent figure fighting against some shadowy force in the darkness. But in pitching that, and that's what he's trying to make you think by saying like, they gave me a bad contract that I'm gonna be very vague about the details on, and probably no one will ever respond with more details that'll make me look bad. He didn't realize that he's also supposed to not reveal how much of a tapped in elite he is. He's supposed to desire to become rich by taking the money from poor conservatives, but not have them realize that that's what he's doing, and not have them realize that he is very much in bed with the elites that he pretends to fight and is massively wealthy and has effectively nothing in common with the people that watch his programming. And in doing the one, he messed up on the other. So he's revealing like these contract details. He's finally leaving the Blaze or whatever. Apparently he had been there for 4 years. He didn't initially reveal who the contract was with, but it didn't take long for it to come out that it was the Daily Wire. He's lobbing massive accusations against a company. They're gonna respond. And anyway, he's saying that this contract contains unreasonable demands for control, immoral terms that punish conservative content creators, and multi-million dollar penalties. Now already, if the contract can have multi-million dollar penalties, it stands to reason that the contract is for at least multi-millions of dollars. And so that's not gonna necessarily end up looking good to poor conservatives when they realize that the thing that you're whining about and using to pretend that you're some sort of warrior against elites is a contract that would guarantee for you, even if all of the worst consequences that you're pointing out were to happen, 100 times more wealth than anyone watching your show will have from now until the day they die. So he shows off the contract. You can see a shot from it right here, pointing out completely unacceptable terms like, oh, if you so repeatedly and willingly violate the terms of service of the platforms your content is on, that your content can no longer be there and or it can no longer be monetized, we probably shouldn't have to keep paying you for that stuff. In his mind, that is not in his word, in his mind. I want to be very clear. In his words, that is slavery that he will be under. Many, 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 many millions of dollars every single year. And he expects to get paid that even if his content can't go anywhere and the company making the contract, the Daily Wire, can't make a single cent off of it. So they are going to respond and we're going to get to that. But Brett, I want your thoughts.
I just like, there's a lot of framing that you just laid out there that resonates with a progressive audience, a general, I would say politically minded audience, but it does not resonate whatsoever with right wing audiences who all envision themselves as temporarily inconvenienced billionaires. Now, I think if you look at Steven Crowder's crowd, it's going to be a lot of folks who are wealthy and like conservative businessmanning, and that's what he's doing. Like, these are the same kind of brohards who really like Andrew Tate, whose job is to just go out there and say, hey, I make a lot of money and give me more money so I can have it in front of you. It doesn't need to make sense. So I think in exposing that, he also is just doing a negotiation. I think there's a lot of guys who watch this kind of content who are like, yeah, this is how you do a deal if you're playing hardball. And it is explicitly the flavor of not going through with a deal that you do when you have power and you're also trying to create your own media empire. And so that's what Crowder's doing. He's trying to tell everyone, hey, he might be exposing, hey, I'm angling toward having my own shingle, basically, Crowder, like, you know, the clams of Crowder, I don't know. And we're going to offer terms that are not like this. But I think he's at least set for in terms of content strikes, because in the contract it says that you don't, if any major platforms, for example, U2, I would just sign that because it doesn't say U2. If he gets a contract, there is no U2, so he'll be fine. He won't be banned from U2. This is a really advanced deal sheet with tons of typos in it. Like, this is obviously the first round and they're in negotiations.
Yes, 100%. Now, once it gets to like the ban section, like, again, the thing that he's describing is slavery. So if he literally can't post anything on YouTube, he'll lose 20% of his pay. I feel like that's nothing compared to how significant a drop in reach and monetization that I would assume would be. I feel like that should be worth more than 20%. But again, the deal seems pretty sure. And maybe it'll work. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the Daily Wire is liking it, as we'll get to, but maybe in the end that they'll love it, because again, like, this is him as an independent person and them as an independent company dealing with, but no, but they're tools of the same machine. Like, They can do this little like fit. It's like professional wrestling, the fights between them. At the end of the day, they weren't work for Vince McMahon. Almost literally, Vince McMahon is in those circles. So anyway, I'm sure that he'll end up being fine. And no, Brett, I do not anticipate that my read on this, or even as ridiculous as the entire thing, is going to get through to a lot of his fans. They self-select to a certain sort of audience that possesses some cognitive characteristics and not others. And I think they are quite well aware of the hold they have over the people who watch their content.
And how would we stay in business? And Stephen, this is a very important point. Stephen, again, I think the most entertaining, talented person in the conservative movement, I think one of the most entertaining and talented people in entertainment generally in the country today, has created a very successful content generation company, a very successful production company. But Stephen's never had to create the company that actually distributes, markets, and monetizes all of that content. You know, he talks in his video about being one of the only true independent conservative voices. And I find that incredibly offensive. You know, Stephen, the whole time I've known him, has worked for someone else, has been paid by someone else. That doesn't mean other people tell him what to say. He's a very independent voice, and that's good. So is Matt Walsh, so is Candace Owens, so is Ben Shapiro, so is Michael Knowles, so is Brett Cooper. But Stephen, you know, as much or more than any of them, a very independent voice. But he's not exactly a self-made man.
And how little self-madeness there is to it, we're going to get into more. Thank you to him for the shout out to Brett Cooper. That is the first time I've ever heard that name. I have no idea who that person is. I love that the long list of names that he listed are all independent thinkers that largely agree on virtually everything. Also, and this is where I'm really teeing this up for Brett to criticize me or whatever. Obviously, there are people who like Steven Crowder's content. I don't think anyone would doubt that. And I am sure that those people consider him to be entertaining, or else they wouldn't keep watching his show. I think that that's self-evident. The claim that he's one of the most entertaining people in the world, I get that the Daily Wire valued him. They were willing to give him, you know, 1,000 times more money than he should ever rightly earn in his entire life, to do a show of just alternating between making homophobic comments and then racist comments, and then misogynistic comments, and then, you know, Islamophobic comments. I understand that he can be an animated ball of racial grievances. I do get that, but one of the most entertaining people in the world. Can we just not exaggerate? Can we keep it on the level in this debate? We're talking about something real, Brett. What do you think?
Watching that response is like when you watch the British House of Commons and they're like, my right honorable friend is a huge and just like, is as stupid as a boxcar or whatever British people say when they're mad at each other. Like, he was very respectful. He is a very entertaining, evil person.
Yes.
That is actually worthless in my eyes and has always worked for someone else. So you know, specifically talking about these kinds of things, none of them are independent because none of them have a business model that strictly exists off money they make from people buying their product, right? It's a lot of it's advertising placed by YouTube, Facebook. That is people sticking around to hear other people pitch their products.
Sure.
And because of that dynamic, they're never going to be fully independently voiced. Now, what I think is good about the contract and the deal sheet is at least it lays out a framework for identifying where their money comes from. And if you add up all the platforms he could be demonetized, it says that 20% is Apple, 20% is YouTube, 10% and 10%. So that's 60% of their revenue, they're saying. Maybe a little less than that. 60% of the revenue comes from ad dollars on TV, on like YouTube and Facebook, and then podcasting platforms.
Yeah,
that's what they're saying. And that's boring. Saying like full transparency. Now we can talk about the terms. We can talk about whether we're gonna split up it into a guaranteed contract that gives you a fee no matter what of more than that, and we ding you gives you less down payment, ding you more for each demonetized platform. But Boring's just telling you how it is. And so another little dance that everybody tries to do is kind of be like, just deny the fact that there's like a certain stream of revenue that comes from YouTube without which the lights wouldn't stay on. Yes. But like, there's, you know, still do your thing. Just know that if we get banned, it's not like we can print fake money that isn't coming in anymore to pay your salary, because that's what you're taking when you sign up with someone, is security of income, security of some kind of guaranteed like production help, health insurance, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, the implication could be that that is representative of the portion of the money that's coming from those things. But since it's intended to be a warning not to get banned, it is also possible that those are overestimates, you know, supposed to cut. Like, I don't know, and I don't want to go more in depth into that particular part of this. But that is what I would say. Anyway, yeah, like, and I think I'm being needlessly fair in discussing the merits and downsides of a person who has made the conscious decision, to the extent that he has the capability of making conscious decisions, to have an exclusively terrible, horrific effect on the world. I think that I'm being fair in acknowledging that there are people who like watching him attack trans people or mocking women or attacking African American, whatever. Like, there are people who enjoy that. There's always going to be. I also think though that I understand that from the Daily Wire's point of view, spooling up another one of these racist douchebags to have a show could take a year or two. But like, every single person here knew 8 guys in college that were the exact same thing as Steven Crowder. And granted, it is possible that there is something in his content that I am not familiar with, because I am a well-adjusted person, so I would never willingly watch his content. But I see him come up on Media Matters quite often, and it seems as if his appeal is exclusively just talking about the people that he's afraid of and hates. So I feel like that's not that difficult to reproduce. No, you think it's nuanced analysis of policy, and what do you think it is? He dresses in drag to attack trans people or something, and then what do you think his content is?
No one laughs at, so they're thinking about how their audience, and no one laughs at any Daily Wire content now, period. No one goes like a genuine, like the truth was revealed and now my instinct is to laugh. So they have to kind of make up for that by building out a kind of audience. Now, right now they kill with the audience. The Ben Shapiro, Michael Knowles audience, they have the version of the douchebag audience that laughs by going but they don't have the portion of the douchebag audience that laughs by going, oh, bro.
Yes.
And that's what they're looking for in Steven Crowder. And you can say, I mean, I have no reason to compliment Steven Crowder. I have every reason to just analyze how stupid he is. And I don't feel like I don't have to do that in this situation. But I will say, like, there's a difference between, like, if you have 1,000 douchebag content creators who do make people go, oh, he's just the biggest game in town for that. So that's why they want him.
Yeah, although to that end, I think that some of that is organic, but I think that there's another element, and I want to discuss that in a second. But first, there's a part of this in the Daily Wire. The Daily Wire CEO did like a 52-minute video, and obviously I didn't watch the entire thing. I can't imagine that it couldn't have been cut down to some extent. But anyway, there was one other part that I thought was interesting. So let's jump into this.
He was paid by PJTV when I met him, which was owned by a billionaire at the time. Then he was paid by CRTV for a number of years, which was owned by a billionaire at the time. Then he was paid by The Blaze, which was subsidized by a billionaire. And he didn't necessarily have to be profitable. And he doesn't know for a fact that he was profitable, because as he has said very publicly, all those companies, none of them really shared all the information about what was happening with them. So Steven feels very certain that his show was always profitable, but he doesn't know that his show was profitable.
That is Jeremy Boring, CEO of Daily Wire, I think laying out the entire thing and largely making the case that we've been making for some time, that there is a reason that there is $50 million to hand to a person like Steven Crowder. There's a reason there's however many millions of dollars Ben Shapiro makes, or there's endless money to make, you know, faux documentaries attacking the trans community. There is always money on this side. because there are always billionaires on this side that are doing it for one of several possible explanations. One, they just really enjoy the content, or they think it's an investment in what they really care about, which is staying billionaires and growing their wealth. Steven Crowder has always had some rich person who thought boosting Steven Crowder was in their financial interest. And that is why I think you have to give some credit to them for building their audience. I don't think that if nobody liked it, there was any way that you could force people to watch it. But let's also bear in mind, you know, that documentary that what's his face, Walsh put out, they spent millions and millions of dollars advertising that. Ben Shapiro, ads about him are everywhere and have been. And now you might say, oh, well, he has an audience. It makes sense to do ads about him. But they didn't start the ads a week ago. They've been doing that for years and years and years before he was anything like he is now. And so, yes, it is nice when there is a billionaire who is willing to just throw millions of dollars into a hole to create a platform for you. No one is doing that for anyone on the left. No one has ever done that for anyone on the left. I am not sure that $5,000 has ever been spent to promote the damage report because we don't have a billionaire who's gonna do that. Now, that said, I am not saying that all of Ben Shapiro or Matt Walsh or Steven Crowder's audience is due to being created in a lab and then artificially boosted by millions of dollars. I think that that's necessary, it's a large part. But there is naturally an appeal to their content, and we talk about it pretty often. They know that there are people out there who want to be told that the worst aspects of them are the best aspects of them, that they never need to get better. They never need any more empathy or intelligence or curiosity or consideration. The things about you, the people you hate, the people you're scared of, that makes you inherently superior. That and a whole bunch of stuff that you inherited by birth. Your religion, your country of origin, your race, the fact that you're cis, the fact that you're straight, whatever it is. All of those things make you better than everyone else. And every day, if you tune in, I'm gonna attack those people that you already hate, and I'm gonna convince you to hate them more, and I'm gonna tell you why you're better than them. There is always going to be an audience for that stuff. And then you think about what do leftist shows do? We try to get people to become better than they are, to fight for their own interests, yes, but also to fight for the interests of many other people. To try to put yourself in the head of people who have fundamentally different life experiences in a variety of different ways. We ask people to do things from time to time that are cognitively and emotionally difficult, and to stay tuned in with their eyes on the prize to long-term goals that require tons of work and have major setbacks along the way. On their side, it's always Christmas. You're always the best. We're never gonna make you think about anything that's gonna make you even briefly uncomfortable, unless it's used to fire you up to attack someone. Yes, there is always going to be some kind of audience for that. And if Steven Crowder were to fall off a cliff tomorrow, there would be some other former frat boy who would be saying the same sorts of misogynistic and homophobic things, and he would find an audience for it too. Brett, what do you think? Do you disagree?
I'm absolutely with you on this. This is like the main takeaway of all of it, is that they always have billionaires dumping tens of millions of dollars into their coffers every month, because that's the same chunk of money that they divvy up and give to lobbyists. They're trying, I mean, the whole reason that Charlie Kirk exists is to get the younger generation to stop being so damn understanding of everyone.
Yeah.
And to get them to be, to get to funnel more people into country clubs that can then or just make people act against their own interests and support the super rich, even the and have some kind of BS excuse to claim that it actually helps them too, as they go to their job trying, that it's no longer like a union welding job, it's just some kind of random thing. And get mad at football now. Like, that's what they want. It's really what it is. So when it comes down to the negotiations, now Jeremy Boring is trying to have his cake and eat it too. And he's trying to do the same thing to Steven Crowder. He's just mad. Mm-hmm. It's like when someone has dated other people and they won't date you, you're like, but here are all the reasons on paper why I'm the same as them. but I'm different. I'm slightly different in that you should go with me. Like, do you think Steven Crowder doesn't know that he's been paid the whole way through to make content and have the giantest social safety net or anti-social safety net?
Yeah.
He knows that. And that's just like the classic move that everyone has to take. They're the classic move of the people who are running a business are like, I have to keep the lights on. Every employee I have costs like their salary times probably like 1.75. Like, and all the people that are directly generating revenue, I have parts of the business that are now administrative because I have so many people. There's people that don't make any money for the company that I have to pay as well. And then they all come back and there's gonna be communists that are mad at me who are like, yeah, I paid for the production of your content. You tell me if the deal sheet we frame around that dynamic makes sense to you. If it doesn't, then move on. This is just an offer. And so Steven Crowder's trying to use that. You know, he's eaten from that hand his whole life, trying to just get big enough to get out of that orbit. And now that he has the potential to really thrive out of that orbit, he's doing what you should do in a negotiation, where you look at them and say, like, here's what I'm willing to accept, and it's not what you've offered me. His calculations are like, do I want to say that in a private room? Do I want to say that to a big audience? Do I want to, in turn, try to take down the entire organization a peg, because I'm never going to join them anyway, and I want to show myself as the robust, purer alternative to what they're telling you they do, but really they just suck off a corporate teat.
That could be it. Yeah, if you were planning to do your own independent thing, then why not, you know, burn them down on the way out, I suppose. Okay, there's other aspects of this we could talk about. I might in the social break a little bit, but we have other news to get to, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this. Okay, everybody, we've got a little bit of coverage of some elections coming up that we're gonna get to, and some announcements that seem to be pending. And I'm not referring to the video that Joe Biden put out on his Twitter, which really seems like the prelude announcing that he's gonna run again. But anyway, instead, we're gonna look at the other side of the aisle, starting with this.
I got him elected, pure and simple. He would have never, if I said I wasn't going to endorse you, and I was close, you know, there was no reason to go wild about endorsing him. So, you know, now I hear he might want to run against me. So we'll handle that the way I handle things.
We'll handle that the way I handle things. And according to sources behind the scenes, he has a pretty good idea of how that's going to be. In their words, he's going to, can I say this, Brett? I can say it, right? Yeah, I can say it. I don't think that's, he's going to kick him in the nuts. Now, that is a very Trumpian way to put it, and I have no doubt that there will be some rhetorical nut kicks coming. But I have to say, the information that his team is either leaking or intentionally putting out about the research they're doing and the kicks they're lining up for for Ron DeSantis's panhandle is I don't think it's as strong as they think it is. So I want to lay out some of the avenues of attack they're going to use, and then Brett and I are going to debate, are these actual nut kicks or not? So jumping ahead, he says Trump has talked to political allies about effective ways to pummel DeSantis on both personal issues, recurring concerns about his likability and supposed charisma deficit. It's nice of the Rolling Stone to put supposed there. And policy matters. So there's personal, there's also policy, like DeSantis's hawkish foreign policy, trade stances, and COVID-19 posturing. So I want to start there because we have some more specific stuff we're going to get to. But first, he's not likable enough and he doesn't have enough charisma. So I don't think that he's likable, but the right seems to like him. And generally, especially on the right, the likability thing is, I think, only successful when it's being used to bury literally any female politician. But also because they love that. But the charisma deficit, like, is that gonna matter? Trump has, from their point of view, charisma. Ron DeSantis is not as compelling of a speaker, but when he speaks, he uses the time to attack the sort of people that they want to have attacked. So does it matter that he doesn't have as much charisma? Brett, what do you think?
I mean, Ron DeSantis does not have anywhere near as much charisma as Donald Trump. So that's a weird concept, charisma, like, yes, in ET, he goes zero charisma. And it's like this awesome bag that you don't understand when you watch it in 1980, whatever. And then you have to, when you grow up, you have to look up what charisma means.
Well, I played Dungeons and Dragons, so I know, but anyway.
So, yeah, so likability, however, is something that Donald Trump also struggles wildly at. So, most people would say, let's not attack him at something I'm weak at. That's kind of Donald Trump's go-to, is to say that I'm so strong while complaining something's unfair and I totally lost it. Mm-hmm. He's going to do it in a Donald Trump way. The question is, how much of Donald Trump's mojo is still working?
Yeah.
So is he able to carry that off? Back in the day when he did his first round of debates in the first primaries when he was running in 2016, he just wiped the floor with all of those zero charisma D-bags. It was very obvious. And I think he could have done the same had Ron DeSantis been up there. Who knows? But I think a lot of this is absolutely, in my analysis, leaked intentionally by the Trump campaign to try to scare Ron DeSantis away. But yes. Ron DeSantis is a lot smarter than Donald Trump tactically, for sure, as evidenced by the stuff that Trump admitted to. He's like, I didn't have to endorse this guy, but I found myself endorsing him. And he leaned into me when it was convenient, and he's going to lean away from me when it's not convenient for him to stay under Donald Trump's wing. And so that's obviously the political calculation, but they have to make the moves to see just how strong each one is.
Yeah. Yeah. If the plan is to scare him away, I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this, is that I don't know that this is particularly scary. Of all the things he's going to attack him on, you're not likable enough and you don't have charisma. Well, I mean, people are going to decide that in any election. Specifically attacking him for his hawkish foreign policy, maybe. It doesn't really strike me that DeSantis focuses particularly much on foreign policy, and why would he? He's the governor of Florida, but maybe he will as a presidential candidate. His trade stances, I have never heard him talk about trade. Maybe he does. His COVID-19 posturing, I find it to be annoying and terrible because it resulted in thousands and thousands of needless deaths. But the right has already shown that they love it. So I don't get how that's going to work. He has one other attack, though, specifically. He's going to go after DeSantis for his stance on Social Security. So according to a campaign source, in a Republican primary, only Donald Trump could effectively go after DeSantis for wanting to cut Social Security. Trump has a track record of saying the right things on this issue, both in the general election and a Republican voter is in a primary. DeSantis's record in the House on this topic is very much of the Paul Ryan privatized Social Security platform, which is just not where our voters are now. I think it is true that Donald Trump has been able to pretend to have positions on some of these big things that in the end he doesn't end up having. And I just wonder how much it's going to matter, because the Republicans in the House seem perfectly comfortable attacking Social Security. They don't think that it's going to hurt them too much politically. So if it's just Trump and DeSantis on the debate stage, and Trump is attacking him, saying he's going to cut Social Security, I like centering Social Security and other programs like that in a debate, but is that going to be the sort of thing that breaks through?
Ron DeSantis is a classic old school Republican Party coalition builder, and he's building the coalition in the exact same way that Paul Ryan would have sought to if he was not so like horrifyingly sterile, which is the dirty politics of, all right, I'm going to do the culture war that says the left wing is depraved and hates God and children, all these lies. But really, the bread and butter, when it comes down to it, he's a policy wonk who really wants to put Ayn Rand's playbook in the works for the United States of America. And Donald Trump, and so as much as you say, like, they're fine doing that, the Republican Party seemed fine wanting to privatize Social Security back in the day. Yeah, that iteration of the Republican Party lost to Donald Trump for all the reasons folks who understand fundamentals of politics understand, and policy analysts and people who only work in the like hateful Twitter feeds of online discourse forget, which is don't touch Social Security. It's the third rail of politics for a reason. Donald Trump understood that that was the one like very healthy like vein of politics that does feed people's like actual interests, is protecting Social Security. Even if he doesn't articulate it that way, at least he hasn't attacked it and wanted to privatize it like Republicans have in the past. At least Steve Bannon was like, stay away from stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's what he's going to just try to do. I mean, it really is this next run. If it's DeSantis versus Trump, it's the establishment Republicans wondering if they've filled the bag of sand perfectly enough to switch it in for the idol of Donald Trump. That's what it is. But Donald Trump is a one of a kind Raiders of the Lost Ark idol, and they're trying to replace it with a bag of sand that is Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
And they wonder if any number of stupid anti-trans culture wars are going to fool the populace the way that Donald Trump has so naturally been able to fool them.
I think it is, if it comes down to anything, and the interesting thing about if we have these debates is that I don't know that Trump is as good one-on-one in debates as he is when he has six people to attack. But I think it's going to come down to, can Ron DeSantis attack other people enough to withstand, in terms of people's perception of him, the attacks that will be coming at him from Trump? And he'll attack Trump, sure. But Trump is going to attack him brutally. Trump is going to, I mean, I don't even want to try to predict the things he's going to say about Ron DeSantis. And Ron DeSantis is going to viciously attack trans people, the LGBTQ community, teachers, all that, endlessly. And Trump is going to try to keep up. So it's going to be a really ugly race. But I think the idea that they're just going to have four debates where they go toe to toe on trade policy and social security just seems so ridiculous. What does that have to do with anything of the appeal that they're going to try to make to the base? Anyway, but we will continue to talk about this going forward because, you know, Trump is saying that he's going to gear up his rallies more in the coming months. Okay, with that said, I want to jump into some of the domestic politics going on right now. Let's jump into the first video, C-Block.
I think what we have to do is realize that we have a problem. We have a debt problem. We're at 31.4 trillion of public debt right now. And all we're saying is, should we not make sure that we all recognize how we got there?
So Joe Manchin, fresh off his high five with Kirsten Sinema at Davos, is saying, like, I'm just saying there's a lot of debt. And so when the Republicans are talking about Social Security, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying maybe we got to work with them. But he has more thoughts on this. Here's what he plans to do.
Let's take our trust, the trust funds, whether it's Medicare, Social Security, or Highway Trust. You can't let those go defunct as far as, and what we're saying is we have a trust act. And we would put different committees, bipartisan, bicameral committees together to look at each one of the trust and come up with solutions of how you fix it. We're not getting rid of anything, and you can't scare the bejesus out of people saying we're going to get rid of Social Security, we're going to privatize. That's not going to happen, but we should be able to solidify it so the people that have worked and earned it know they're going to get it. And that's what we're talking about. And I've talked to Kevin McCarthy briefly about that. I'm going to spend more time to find out how we can bring things together.
So Joe Manchin wants to help the Republicans cut Social Security and probably also Medicare and Medicaid. Let's be very clear about that. He's using a word salad to try to hide that fact. And he's trying to reassure you by saying, oh, we can't be scaring people talking about getting rid of it. First of all, nobody is saying that you're going to utterly get rid of Social Security. We're just rightly scared about the things you will actually do. And as scared as we are of them happening, you appear to be just as scared of being clear and upfront about what you plan to do, because you'll notice that he didn't there, nor will they ever say, we're going to raise the age for you to be able to qualify for Social Security. If you're 50 now, look forward to a couple more grinding years of daily labor before you're able to get what you've been paying into your whole life. Oh, also, we're not going to give you as much money when you finally get it. Oh, sure, if you're already on it right now, or if you're going to qualify in a year or two, we know that you vote, so we're not going to screw you over. But if you're like 40 now, no, we're going to steal some of that money from you. Every single check you'll eventually get from Social Security, we're going to take a portion of it that should be yours, and you're just not going to get it. Oh, and you're also going to have to wait a couple of years before you qualify for it, so we're stealing those years too. That's what they want to do. They know how little support there would be for it, which is why they will never admit it. But just look ahead to a month from now, 2 months from now, when they come out with their report, that is exactly what they're going to be calling for. Brett, what do you think?
I think that there is this feeling that a lot of people who are not engaged that much in politics have, which is, yeah, you can't spend more money than you have. And then there is this other instinct in people that's like, stay away from my Social Security, stay away from my Medicare. I like those things. When you ask people if they like those things, they like those things. When those two things come to a head, You're always going to lose if you're convincing people that you're cutting Medicare and you're cutting Social Security. You are always going to lose. It is, for as much as they scold Democrats for saying, like, you treat your people like, you're so high and mighty when it comes to being moral and telling people they can't talk a certain way or be a certain way. The Republicans are the ones who are like, no, you can't have food on the table, grandpa. That's what they're saying. And in these situations, since essentially Keynes said, let's try paying money and taking on debt and seeing what happens, there has been a growing middle class in America that has only been shrunken by such things as neoliberalism and the attempt to get rid of those protections. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like that, the correlating factor is whether we're investing in the people. And like, as FDR said, he's like, the only reason I'm saying there's a quote social security tax is no one would believe it could work without feeling like they're paying into the system. Now, I hope that Keynes and modern monetary theorists to a certain extent are like right in all this. But in the meantime, just strictly politically, Manchin's doing all he can to try to say, like, you know, remember that you can't run a business with a negative balance. And I don't know, like, bipartisanship is good. So let's you know, talk about the virtues of that and hope that it blinds people to the fact that they need to eat and have medicine when they get old.
Yeah. It's going to be wildly unpopular. He's going to try to go along with it. We'll see how many other people line up with him. Probably cinema, if I'm guessing. Anyway, we don't have time. We got to go to break. When we come back, we are going to be talking about more news. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Yes, in this particular case, the dragon has had a rough week and he yawns as his roar.
Oh, I was trying to pawn it off. It was more of a stretch. Yep. It was like one of those.
Okay, well, it was a good one. Okay, we're going to get to both of these stories. We have very little time. Let me tee this up. A Republican state senator in North Dakota decided that with Juneteenth like potentially becoming a holiday there, it was time to address the elephant in the room, which is that all of you are lazy and you get too much time off. Take a look at this.
I'd look at this perspective as a small business owner. My frustration was always the day after Thanksgiving and trying to run an enterprise and everyone, the expectation that they got up. And thus the questioning Senator Braunberger about, mandated, I guess I would, Mr. Varvel, you know, kind of pointed at that same thing. From the standpoint, and granted, this is a state holiday, so it's impacting the state offices, but I still see those as enterprises. And as Senator Braunberger pointed out, some of those are going to have to be open. And I like that limitation of, it just seems like our work is, we're having more and more days off for whatever. And, you know, how people choose to take advantage of those days and which days they like to take off. I would like to leave that to the individual and their individual employer to determine what it's going to be. So strictly from a commerce standpoint, I'm not a fan of adding more non-working days to the calendar.
So I'm going to give him minimal credit for clearly realizing the dangerous territory that he's treading into because of how much he's like, well, you know, I'm not saying, I'm just saying it's my personal, blah, 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 but the message is exactly what I said it was. There's too many days off. You all shouldn't get any more days off. And in particular, when he says get days off for whatever, when the proposed day off is for Juneteenth, I get the other message that you're sending there. But the clear one is you guys get too many days off. Would you be surprised to find out that that's not true? A 2020 study by the OECD found that workers in the United States get less paid time off than workers in every other developed nation. And of the ones that they do get off, all of them are federal holidays. So conceivably, if they didn't exist as federal holidays, we would just have to hope that all of these red states would just give them out on their own as state holidays. And he is looking at that situation where we are more worked than anyone else on the planet. And you guys are lazy. You have it too easy, Brett.
Yeah, like I would pick a different fight. I would choose President's Day. You know, like in like mm-hmm. Independence. It's and I would say that Juneteenth is always a fascinating like pat on the back for something you never should have had to stop doing in the first place. Like you should not have had slavery. Yes. We stopped slaving people. Let's take the day off is a one way that he could have spun it. But I feel like ending slavery in America should be celebrated. There should not have been, nor should there have continued to be slavery in America. And your argument that we not celebrate the end of it is an argument sort of just from a base political standpoint that you were like, yeah, it's not that important.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah, yeah. I love going from our first story where, by the way, Crowder was going to get 4 paid weeks off every year. And he didn't have to work Fridays. And he was paying $50 million. Anyway, to us, like, oh my God, you guys want a day off occasionally? I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that you're taking advantage of the system. What I don't understand is, why don't more politicians run on increasing the number? Like, why isn't that a thing? Like, for me, I think we should have 12 labor days a year. I think every single month, and some of them are already established holidays that take place on Mondays. Every single month, we're gonna have one Monday that is a national holiday. That is what I give to you, the workers of America. And then gradually, every year, we're gonna add one more so that gradually we get up to the 4-day work week that we should have. Why does nobody even propose anything like that? And we can use these to also shed light on important historic figures and events, things that we should know, but they're days that we are going to protect that you don't have to work. No, I've literally never seen anyone run on that. Am I crazy? Is that dumb?
I went to a Catholic school where we had to have like uniforms, and this is like everyone being like, and why are there not more free dress days?
I know.
And everyone was like, but that's an excellent point. People would be like, that is an excellent point. That I don't know why there's not. And so if someone was like, you should have more days off, they'd be like, I should have more days off. It's been awesome, man. These last few weeks, we had like 1 5-day week and it's been great.
So think about it. It's only one day more, but it's 50% more weekend. And by the way, we're speaking in broad brush terms. I understand that not everybody gets weekends even now. I worked for many, many years in the service industry and our busiest times are on the weekends. This is obviously not going to equally benefit everyone. And I think that there's a lot of other aspects of this story that need to be looked into and reformed so that more people can benefit from these sorts of things. But in broad terms, it is not impossible to move to the system that other developed countries have. We could do that. Someone could push for it. I would argue people would like it. I would argue, like Fox is gonna complain about it. Let them. Let them be the ones that go to war on making sure that you don't get time off. And then how would that not benefit you in a primary to be the person that's pushing for that? I'm an idiot. Obviously, if I were to run for office, I would get blown out. So clearly there are things I don't understand about the process. But I feel like it is both a good, I think it is good. I think it is necessary. And I think it would be popular. So I don't know.
Yeah, especially there's ways to justify it because this is not being like, just give us every day off. It is like, no, there's been higher productivity over time. So really like, and where has the extra, you know, resource gone? Well, it's actually gone into the people who, to like disproportionately benefiting the people who were already rich to begin with. And it's not, so give us, reinvest that in your workers. I would love to see the argument over whom to celebrate and what to celebrate. Just the national like, all right, give me 7 more names, 7 more things about America. What would we all coalesce around? What would the right be like? It's not too woke. And the left be like, yeah, I don't care. I think the left would just be like, give me a day off.
What if we gave them like, and this would just be purely pragmatic. We give them like one of them is a Rush Limbaugh day.
Yeah, have it. I'm not going to be at work anyway to listen to you talk about how awesome he was.
Exactly. I'm not going to think about it. It's clearly, it's manipulative. But yeah, I think we can find some more events and more individuals. This is something we should continue to look into. This is the productivity dividend. You've worked for it. Now it is given back to you in terms of time for you to pursue your own interests, to rest and relax a little bit, see your family. I think you deserve it. Okay, that's all the time we have in our first hour. Lots more to come in the aftermath. We'll see you after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.